American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Monday, September 17th, 2007. And you are listening to Newsreel, the Wall Global Sit Rep on Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. Rand Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. And you can follow along with all these news stories and check my facts by going to my live journal, and you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that could be heard on RAN Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media, Jack, WNY Media Network, not Jack Work, not WNY Media Ejecting, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, and anywhere else where radio is still free. Big news in my life. I busted my iPad. I'm not too really pleased about that, but, you know, and I just did a quick cry for help post, you know, my whiny post on my live journal where I went, Everyone's like, well, you should have had it in a hard case. Well, you know, obviously I did have it in a hard case. You know, what happened was, what I do is I usually used a multi-layer leather approach where I had like a case and it was inside a secondary case and it was all like leather and padded and everything. And it was worked really well. It saved my iPack for a duration of a very long time. I had it for almost, well, ever since Dual Parallel gave it to me. That's quite a while ago. That's almost like, what, 2-3 years ago? So, you know, it was doing well. It was doing well. And then, of course, I was looking at directions. You know, you're reading, driving, reading. Shouldn't be doing that kind of stuff, but that's what I was doing. I was reading, driving. Got the directions. Put the PDA down on the passenger seat. Buddy gets in the car. He's excited. I'm excited. Nobody's thinking about the PDA. And then crunch! PDA takes a surefire to the screen. Not so good, but on the upswing. Thank you for all the WOGs out there who would light candles rather than curse my darkness. They have sent me links to good places where I can go to buy equipment to replace the screen on my iPad, which is what I'm probably going to do. Or we can do the tried and true guy technique of buying a new PDA or just setting yourself up so that you have a, you know, like a wearable, which really, I mean, that's really what it's going to take, isn't it? I mean, we've got the Linux now to the point where we can put it on a wearable and it's actually useful. You know, you can do stuff with it, send and receive email, do the browsing, get the burning going. You know, this is stuff you can actually do with Ubuntu. So the question is, how do we just finally get it deployed? How do we start utilizing it? Because all the tech in the world, I mean, there's been PDAs around forever, right? Everybody knows there's a PDA. I mean, there are still people that look at you when you whip out the PDA and say, like, whoa, dude, what's that? You've got a handheld computer? But that's far less common than it used to be. It used to be like, whoa, dude, you must be like high-tech ninja guy. Right now, everybody's either got a dual screen or a Game Boy or something like that. Usually people think it's a video game. You know, like people go, oh, that's a, no, you're playing games? No, I'm not, actually. I'm planning, you know, my eventual domination of the planet. Oh, I see. And then they kind of chortle. I'm not really liking the direction which the general populace is holding of the geek of late. Have you noticed that? They're kind of drifting back into their old habits. They used to be that, you know, before, geeks were cool. Geeks were the ridicule thing. Oh, look at the antisocial nerd. And then computers became cool. Hackers came out. Angelina Jolie was one. Everybody thought that was really hot. And suddenly, everybody was on the hackers. Everybody wanted to be a hacker. It was hacker chic, hacker culture. They made the Matrix. I mean, everything went really hardcore. Now they're claiming that cyberpunk is dead. It's the golden age of cyberpunk is over, which they're wishing, because it's really hard to control cyberpunks. You know, that's the real bitch of it. You know, they're going to try to make being cyberpunk not cool anymore. And can they do it? Can they do it? Is it the battle of the cool where it's going to be, you know, the Fox media machine on one corner and, well, you know, Sean in the other one, which in which case, wow, I better get on some more after now, man, because I'm here to tell you that it's upsetting and kind of frightening how everyone's kind of viewing knowledge as dangerous stuff. Oh, reverse engineering is illegal. You know, I don't know, man. Like, when I was a kid, I used to take stuff apart with screwdrivers and all that kind of jazz. It doesn't really seem like it should really be all that illegal. We got to keep some kind of perspective on this. I don't care if it is after 9/11. We still need to keep perspective on this. Holy crap. You know, I mean, if anything, you know, since we are living in a post 9/11 world, maybe we should be a little bit more concerned about our government. After all, they're the one who knocked down Building 3. Then it's not. Okay, you know what? Let's get off the 9/11 trip. Let's talk about Vietnam and World War II and World War I and all the other wars that were kind of fabricated for us to kind of get involved with so that we could, make money for the banks. This is the idea here. But anyway, I wouldn't want to get... Let's not get too crazy with the politics right off the top. I've been talking a little bit about politics on the lately. I should probably weigh in on my current political stance. I hate to say it because, you know, I'd have to think that I might be kind of drifting into, like, the atheist Republican sort of viewpoint lately, just because I don't really see anything sustainable from the other side of the Democrats. Now, it could be said that, of course, you know, we got, like, you know, a few hundred million people in America, so there's got to be some kind of a mix between the two that's obviously going to work, okay? So I'm not saying, oh, Sean, you're Republican. No. The problem I have with Republicans is that they're kind of... On some of the, like, and now I'm not going to say all Republicans. I'm just going to say, like, the archetypical, you know, let's go with, like, Ann Coulter or whatever the hell her name is, okay? Like, she's, you know, there's a lot of stuff that she says that's just, you know, right out to lunch. But some of the stuff she says is not right out to lunch, you know what I mean? And there's some obvious stuff going on there which deals with human nature. And I think that sometimes maybe the Republicans are a little bit more grounded in reality than, you know, the ideals of some of the Democratic or some of the other stuff. By the same token, there's libertarian stuff, too. Some of the libertarian stuff I like. You know, hell, some of even the communist and fascist stuff I like. You know, ooh, that's dangerous stuff to say, Sean. Well, it's true. You know, it's hard to keep all this stuff straight in your head, especially since you've got, again, the multi-billion-dollar media machine constantly cranking out information to keep you off balance. Because if you feel bad that you're not, like, a staunch supporter one way or the other, you feel you should be a staunch supporter one way or the other, you got to bear in mind, the media exists to make you confused, right? If you're confused and you have a craving, that means you spend money, right? Which is really what the media is all about. The television is about making you bleed money. That's the idea. That's really the basic concept. They will give you stuff that you like, i.e. TV shows and all that kind of stuff. But even now, the TV shows are turning into advertisements. You got product placement everywhere. It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad, actually. You know, everybody's out after your money. Even me. At the end of the show, I ask for donations. And that's something that keeps me awake at night. It really does. It's like one of those things that, you know, sits there and makes me feel like I'm this hideous hypocrite, you know? I mean, it's wretched. You're sitting there and you ask for donations at the end of your program, you know? So does that make you the same as, like, you know, I don't know, any number of organizations that ask you to pay money every 4 months for a new operating system? I mean, there's licensing and advertising beamed to whatever gaming console you got. You know, it's too much, you know. There's way too much saturation going on there. I don't like it, and I don't want to be part of the problem either, you know. But I guess I got to do what I got to do, you know. I mean, now that I've got a halfway decent job, God love me, I'm not getting punched in the face every 2 days, which is kind of nice, kind of like that. Learning an awful lot really quick, and provided they don't fire me because I'm too old and stupid, I should be okay. But that's and incidentally, things are going well at the job. Don't freak out. I'm sure people are always. I always downplay stuff. Things are going well at the job. I'm very happy there. Things are working out. Life is looking up for the Seanster. However, now the question is, what do we do? Okay, so I'm not struggling to survive because everybody's been there. Hopefully you've been there. Hopefully you're not struggling to survive. But you know what I mean. There's a point where you get to a point in your life, hopefully, where you've kind of like, you know, belted off. You've nailed into the wall. You're hanging on your ropes. You're all secure. And you sit there and you go, okay, I made it this far. Okay, now what? What's the next step? Where's the next, you know, what's the next rock cropping we're going to go for? And the higher you get on the rock column, the more tempting it is not to reach anymore. Because as you reach, you risk so much. You risk so much whenever you try to, like, gain a lot of ground. So you've got to gain ground in a very special way and so on and so forth. I mean, I've got ideas. I still want to set up my theme park /... I don't know, commune / retreat spa resort / whatever the hell it is / dojo, whatever the hell you want to call it. I still want to build one of those. I do, up in the northern, maybe in BC or Vancouver Island or something like that, but that'd be cool. You know, so the walks could come by, hang out, you know, kind of do a spiritual sort of quasi-cyber retreat thing. That'd be neat. I'd like to run that. I would. The wife's down with it, too. She'd be all cool with that. So, you know, I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to think of ways to do that, you know, how to invest money, because everything, unfortunately, and this is the other big bitch, too, is that everything comes back to money. I mean, it would be great if we didn't have money. I mean, really. I mean, of course, we'd have to have some kind of method in which we'd, you know, have commerce and stuff like that. But, you know, just the whole, you know, take on money. Somebody said something to me once. They said, you know, it's not that I really want money. It's that everybody else wants money, and therefore I have to have some of it, which is true, man. It's like, once again, I'd recommend checking out the film Zeitgeist. Google search Zeitgeist. Watch the whole thing online, and it really starts making you kind of angry about the whole situation involving cash. But, yeah, I mean, I just don't like money. This is what happens when my PDA breaks. I get all down with the world, you know. Oh, God, help us. But am I the only one? Am I the only one? No. Of course, we all hide inside the box, don't we? Yes, server provides shelter for us all. Protect us with thy cathode rays. It's true. We all run to the security of the community. We run online and we whine and bitch and, you know, hopefully, you know, we don't just hang it up there and give up on life and turn in our shoes for the cable and that's it. I mean, we still have to stay functional and moving and everything like that. It's just the process of, you know, how to move forwards in life. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Really? I mean, you know, I'm just talking here. I'm just talking, trying to make you think a bit. It's the purpose of the show. Got to make you think. Got to keep you informed so you know what time is what. Let's get into some feedback. I got a scolding email here. Oh, Sean. Reference to show 171. OST is not a band, you fucking retard. It stands for the original soundtrack. That song you played was actually Juno Reactor doing the usual stuff, but you can always tell a Juno track. They just have a certain vibe to them. And then he gives me the Wikipedia entry to the Matrix Revolution soundtrack. Also, that's Matrix Revolution soundtrack, not The Matrix. It was a good movie. Number one was the only good movie from the series. I thought the other two really sort of, well, blew. Even more horrid was the MMO game that just picked up where number three left off. So much potential, such horrible execution. And that was from S. Not going to give out your name online because I don't want you being flamed out. But it's true, yes, you know, I make mistakes and rely on the WOGs out there in the really real world to make sure that I don't drop the ball incessantly. Dear Sean, I seem to have somehow been credited for a news story on a cyberpunk Gibson's new upcoming Neuromancer movie on your journal, yet it is not my story. Oh my goodness. Furthermore, none of the stories I've sent you are in your journal. If I sent a story in and someone else got credit for sending it in, I couldn't care less. However, if some people seem to hold that news credit in high regard, so I thought I'd mention it, and that's from a board retry fail. Well, you know, thank you. Thank you very much. I do try to do the news thing as best I can. Sometimes I don't give credit. Some stories are blank, and that's because it was sent in by a guy whose name was already there, or I found it myself, or whatever. But, you know, I guess that there are people who are, you know, really quite, you know, proud of the fact that I mentioned their news stories, as well they should be. I mean, they're good stories. So whoever sent in that story on the Cyberpunk Neuromancer thing, very sorry. Gave credit to Abort Retry Fail. Apparently, I did not give it to him. So whoever sent it in, thank you, server. You are mighty and powerful. Dear Sean! Sean Dude, sorry. My bad. Sean Dude, lay off the South Alabama. Lay off South Alabama. Okay. You know what? Never been there. You have WOGs down here. Besides which, we're not all redneck, inbred, uneducated, gun-toting, violent, wife-beating, sister-marrying hicks. That's just a stereotype. Okay, so I do carry a pistol, but I do so legally. And I'm not overtly violent. I'm educated. My parents were not related in any way. I don't meet my wife. I don't beat my wife. Not often, anyway. Since the birth of our son, we don't have time for a lot of BDSM play. I most certainly didn't marry my sister either. I married my cousin by marriage, twice removed. Her mother and my cousin met at our wedding, and we got married ourselves, copycats. Watch the stereotypes, dude. But keep getting the word out. You're doing an excellent job. Moog. Well, absolutely, Moog. I heartily apologize upon the Old South. You know, and then I don't know why people would think you guys are gun-toting, sister-marrying hicks. I have no idea why people would think that. But and I also genuinely appreciate the humor in the email. I'll tell you this much. A lot of people think, you know, oh, ignorant Americans. Anytime I've ever been to been down to the United States, and it's not just with fans. I mean, anytime I've ever been down in the United States, the people down there have been the nicest people in the world. I would even go so far as to say the people in the United States of America are nicer to me than Canadians are, and I'm Canadian. You know what I mean? Like, if I go down there and I'm just, and we're not talking like in restaurants and stuff like that. I mean, just generally on the street, hi, how are you, that kind of a thing. It seems that Americans just seem nicer. Maybe I'm on crack. I don't know. I personally think that I probably get along famously in the Old South. You know what I mean? I mean, they got a lot of, you know, black marks against them and stuff like that, where, you know, they got the racism thing and all that sort of stuff causing problems, yada, yada, yada. But I think I get along fine. And you know what? If there's anybody in the Old South there who, has been offended because I'm laying on to the stereotypes, those stereotypes exist, you know? Maybe they exist for a reason. Maybe they do, but, I feel bad. I wouldn't want to just diss on someone because I happen to live in the South. So, if I've done that, I'm sorry. Jeez, this is just a penance show today, eh? Dear Sean, on the whole one world government thing. I remember a while back I was asking about the one world government. Well, we got some feedback on them. My opinion on the one world government is positive. We can't have any cool Star Trek advancements in technology and space exploration if we're all trying to nuke each other. Now, as far as who should run it, none of the current establishment governments, that's for sure. I think there's going to be a one-world government that works to better humanity and not screw us over, and it needs to be run by geeks. We can't all have half-brain political politicians ruining the future for humankind when we have perfectly able minds available. Imagine a world where all the great minds provide us with the techs and information required to survive Imagine a world where all the greatest minds providing us with the tech and information required to survive are the ones making all the decisions. The simple-minded should never be in control of anything, and those with ulterior motives shouldn't be allowed near the red button. Well, that's very true. I mean, the thing is, though, is that when you start choosing, a political spectrum, you really got to start looking at, like, if you have a lot of humans involved, there's an opportunity for corruption there. I mean, even in Appleseed, anybody who hasn't seen the new remake of Appleseed, you should check that out. They had this thing where they had, these humans in a constant debate with Gaia, which was this massive computer which, took in all the variables and then made the correct decision on that. I'm really not, this is going to piss a lot of people off, I'm really not against having a computer program, make some key decisions about stuff. I think that that's probably a good way to take out the human element, because realistically, I mean, there is a right and a wrong way to do a lot of things. And the way you make a decision of it being right or wrong, according to, my limited schedule, is, the whole moral compass thing, where, if it increases suffering over long-term good, decreases suffering bad. Of course, when we relate to the whole iRobot thing, where, we're now all prisoners. But this is kind of science fiction. Robots are trying to kill us, So you can't really... kind of base too much on that. But yeah, it's something to think about. Maybe something like what, the guys in Appleseed cooked up with there, Matsumi Mashiro or Shiro Matsumune, whatever his name is. I mean, that concept's pretty good. Maybe if we had the whole bioroid, 50% bioroid population to keep the humans in line. We're monkeys. We're aggressive, savage monkeys who like hurting things, hurting other people, and just generally breaking stuff. I mean, wouldn't we sell as many first-person shooters if we weren't innately violent? The games do not make people violent. People seek out violent games. It's the truth. I mean, it's just part of the human nature. No matter, as long as we're eating red meat and, got hormones and stuff like that, teenage boys are going to want guns and blowing stuff up. And if not, they're going to want to drive fast and street race and assert dominance and all that good monkey behavior. So we got to realize that. We got to realize that and try to use that to our advantage without turning them into, psychotic killers and dropping them in foreign lands to kill their children. In IBAN news. Now listen to this one. Internet ban going on from Slipstream JC. Thank you very much. In a presentation before in the European Parliament last week, EU Security Commissioner Franco Frattini outlined a new set of anti-terrorist proposals, including plans for a Europol explosives database, airplane passenger list database, and legislation that would criminalize publication of bomb-making instructions on the internet. I don't really know how that's going to really help anything, because if you want to know how to make a bomb, I mean, you don't need to go to the internet. The proposals are based on finding a research group that include law enforcement officials and experts from the private industry. I have received what I think will prove to be a groundbreaking report from the public and private expert group, which I have established, that contains 50 valuable recommendations to improve the security of explosives, precursors, and detonators across the EU, says Frattini. These recommendations will form the basis for the EU action plan, which should be adopted in November. A few details are available to provide insight into the specifics of the proposed program, but it will clearly involve criminalizing dissemination of some information that could potentially be used for terrorist activity. You can find detailed instructions on all kinds of terrorist tactics, including production of explosives, on the internet, said Frattini. These forms of behaviors will be made punishable across the EU. So they're going to start making certain types of information illegal online. Not so good. Not so good to have, you know, the information online totally illegal. I don't know how I feel about that, but it's one of those kind of things where you have to look at it and go, this is what they're planning to do. I can't really say that I'm really all that surprised by it. I can't say that this is something that has really shocked the hell out of me, but in actuality, I could see maybe why they're doing it. I don't agree with it, but we got to come up with a different way of kind of combating this, because the internet is not the problem here. The problem is that you just have a lot more educated people and a lot greater access to information. Is that bad? No. So what we have to do is we have to change the motivation here. We have to change it on the back end. That's a Band-Aid solution, removing access to the bomb information, because they'll find it another way. You're going to need to find another method of making it so people do not want to build bombs. I think that would probably be a much better idea. And in AI news, which I probably should have called singularity news. See, this is the idea. The idea is that there's going to be some kind of a singularity that shows up, some sort of like an event that occurs that is going to be, life-changing and, you know, essentially redo all the life on the planet. This is going to be like a really, really big deal. So a lot of, you know, heavy brain people from the transhumanist crowd and from the cybernetics crowd, they're all convinced that this singularity is going to be artificial intelligence. Once AI shows up, then, you know, that's pretty much going to be the end of the game for a lot of other different problems, and it's going to open up. It's going to be, you know, culturally transforming. So, and who's to say it's not? But anyway, a Canadian company, Intelligence Realm, last week launched a disturbing computing project on Linux called Artificial Intelligence, reverse engineering the brain. The company has invited members of the public to volunteer and donate computer time to help the project develop artificial intelligence. Similar to other distributed computing projects such as SETI at Home or Folding at Home, this project is part of a larger project that is reverse engineering the brain in order to achieve AI. The process will implement Bionic Berkeley Open Infrastructure for Network Computing. One of the critical issues blocking our advances in field is computing power. The human brain has an estimated 100 billion neurons. Simulating biophysical neural networks of this magnitude requires computing resources that few organizations have. By employing a large network of computers, we can overcome this problem. We ask the public at large to volunteer for this task and donate their computer time, which will allow us to build a scale artificial intelligence system, said Ovindu Angladeli, project leader. Sorry if I'm screwing up your name, buddy. The company said the research findings allow it to move to the development phase and start building a system that will scale beyond the human brain capacity. Their final goal is to have a system that integrates knowledge from many disciplines like mathematics, physics, and chemistry. The company believes that by creating such a system, there will be exceptional benefits for society that will speed up scientific discovery across all disciplines. They liken the changes that achieving AI would bring to society is similar to those by the computer revolution, which brought about the unprecedented changes in society, which is true. I mean, this is all, you're kind of touching on the whole, like, singularity thing. But, I mean, if you had AI, you know, it would pretty much, you know, be the end of games there. Acknowledging that each technology can have its pitfalls, the company said the confidence the risks can be minimized and overcome through strict control, while at the same time allowing everyone to fully enjoy the benefits and promises of this technology. But don't expect intelligence and self-aware androids like in the Blade Runner variety quite yet. The company has cautions against expecting a quick time frame for the system implementation. The conservative estimate of a time range is between 5 to 10 years. But the company said that it's important to start now so the goal can be reached. So we're talking about it now. This is pretty pie in the sky, you know. There are no two ways about it. They want to put in, they want to build AIs, and they want to, you know, distribute computer time for it. And provided, you know, everything's all above board and they're not actually using your computer time for something else, it's a pretty interesting idea. Is it worthwhile? Is it worthwhile to go there with your Linux or Ubuntu system and donate your processor time? I've got a box sitting here. Why don't I do that? Why don't I do that? Contribute to AI. Why don't you do that? Is it because we're all just a little bit afraid of AI? Is that part of the equation? I don't know. I suppose it's coming, isn't it? I suppose it's coming, and there's not much we can do about it. It may not be here in 5 or 10 years, but it'll be here in 25 years, and I guarantee it'll be here within the next 50 years. So, you know, you can either master it or be mastered by it. Now is the time. Now is the time for you to start focusing a little bit more on technology, I think, because really that is the future of our race. That is what is happening with the human race, is technology. If you don't know how to use computers, well, you're not listening to this program. maybe you're only mildly wired up. Maybe you just got, you know, your little MP3 or wave file or music listening device or whatever, and you're listening to this. But perhaps it is a good idea to get yourself involved in some way with either a club or some type of an organization, or maybe with a job that will enable you to learn more about tech. Because honestly, as the tech accelerates, okay, the days of guys being able to walk in off the street and learn information on the fly without going to like major universities and training for 10 years before you get out the gate. Because before, guys used to get out of university, right? They go get the computer science degree and they'd be like, hooray, I have a computer science degree. And then they walk into some menial job where the computer science degree was like way more than what they needed. Now, they get out of school with this computer science degree and they walk into a job and they have to like relearn everything because everything has changed. The field, the whole industry is so incredibly dynamic that they're right back to square one, and that all that ticket from the university gives you is something to say that, hey, I know how to learn and I'm pretty good at it and I'm reliable. I spent a lot of money, so I'm not just going to bail and quit on you and move to another job. This is exactly what university has become, and it could be argued that's all university ever was. I got in big crap from a university prof who was like, why are you so down on education? Why? I mean, education's a great thing, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not. I'm not down on education, okay? I'm really not. I think education is vital. I mean, it's a lot better solution than trying to ban bomb-making instructions on the internet. I think everyone needs to get more educated. I say this often on the show. I encourage people to, you know, if you can afford to go to school, by all means, do that. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of people with doctorate degrees making flipping burgers, you know what I'm saying? So on some front, it's got to help you. But that said, what I object to is when you have the people in the white coats and in the ivory tower saying that, you know, because Johnny, you know, no good has made something in his garage, it has no value, and no one believes him because he hasn't got any university ticketing, right? It's not enough that you know something, you must have another's acknowledgement that you know it. And that kind of annoys me a little bit. But I guess, I mean, you got to have standards, right? You got to have standards. So maybe it's my problem. But, you know, you can see why that some things regarding universities and the whole snooty, snotty, nose up in the airness of the whole thing sometimes just pisses me off. In cybernetics news, we've got a very cyberpunk show today. The show is becoming very, very cyberpunk. I've noticed that more and more. I mean, it was always kind of cyberpunk. It was always kind of Edison Carter, Network 23, kind of Blade Runner, you know, Max Headroom-y kind of thing going on there. But now, more than ever, I think it's... with the news stories I'm getting and I'm finding, holy crap, dude. Hearing aids help millions of people, but many resist them because they think wearing one carries a social stigma. It's true, they're obvious. Hearing aids have a serious lifestyle limitations. The hearing impaired can't wear them while showering or swimming, and most models are hard to wear while sleeping. Now, a new kind of hearing aid that aims to overcome these problems in clinical trials. It's invisible, waterproof, because all its circuitry is included, its battery and microphone is in the user's head. Developed by Autologix of Boulder, Colorado, the device picks up sound with a microphone implanted underneath the skin behind the user's ear. The signal is processed by electronics and sent to a tiny vibrating piston implanted against the small bones in the middle ear. The bones transmit the vibrations to the inner ear, which encodes them as nerve impulses and sends the information to the brain. You can have a normal life, says Autologix CEO Jose Bedova. You can be exposed to environments where hearing aids have difficulty operating properly. He also suggests that implanting creates a psychological bond with the device that is a life-enhancing. Individuals implanted with the system have said it becomes part of you. There's a greater sense of security. The device is powered by a battery that is recharged when the user places a small radio transmitter against his head for 60 or 90 minutes. Jesus. The transmitter is held to the skin by a magnet on the implant. If an inductive coil in the implant converts the radio energy to electricity and recharges the battery with it. The battery can stay inside the body for at least 5 years, according to the company, before it needs to be replaced. So every 5 years, you're going to get your battery switched. The implanted components are hermetically sealed together to protect against leaks, so electronics, microphone, and inductive coils are replaced as well. However, the piston in the middle ear remains in place. Now, this is really interesting technology because, especially with the, you know, all the MP3s and sound players they got out there now, I wonder, because there's a lot of people who are stepping forward saying, whoa, we're going to be getting a lot of hearing damaged kids. You know, because we're handing out all these devices that have these amazing headphones with state-of-the-art technology, which we're giving out to kids, which is fine. Nothing wrong with that. But, I mean, there's, you know, they're going to be damaging their hearing if they do it wrong. And by the simple factor of the fact that there's so many out there and a certain percentage will do it wrong, the amount of hearing impaired people will go up. So this technology, this company, is putting their eggs in a really good basket. Hearing aids are going to be required. And for the people out there, once they get roped in and locked into a system where they got to stick magnets up to the side of their head for 60 to 90 minutes every night just so they can hear, you can see how this could be kind of a problem. Now, this is yet another reason why you want to really look after your hearing. Look after your hearing. Look after yourself, for crying out loud. You know how many people don't even really care? They don't look after themselves. They don't brush their teeth. They don't, you know, shower regularly. I mean, this sounds kind of ridiculous. Like dreadlocks. For example, dreadlocks. I don't like dreadlocks. I don't like dreadlocks. I mean, there was a time when I looked at them and I thought, you know, hey, that's kind of cool, yada, yada, yada. But dreadlocks, generally, it kind of, you know, socially, it sends quite a message when you see dreadlocks. You know, I know there's people listening to the program who have dreadlocks, okay? And I'm not ripping on you, but you got to understand that, you know, pretty much people are going to judge you because of those dreadlocks. Just as because people judge, is it right that they do that? No, I don't think it's right that people should judge you from how you look, but they do. And dreadlocks send a hell of an image, you know, because generally, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the way you make dreadlocks is you just kind of remain sort of unkept and you allow your hair to mat to a certain degree, and they're kind of dirty, you know. Dreadlocks and me, I don't really know, you know. Mind you, I've seen some guys with dreadlocks that look okay. You know, I've seen it's a hard thing to pull off. You know, it's hard to pull off dreadlocks. You know, if you can do it, then rock on. Definitely not for me. Definitely not something I would do. And if one of my buddies was like, hey, man, I'm thinking about growing dreadlocks, I'd be like, no, dude, don't do that. Don't do that. But, you know, that said, there are people out there from different ethnic backgrounds who, you know, naturally can form dreadlocks very, very easily. And it looks very, very good. There's no problem. In that case, hey, fill your boots, dude. Fill your boots. But I don't know. I just personally, I don't think dreadlocks would be something. How did I get onto dreadlocks based on this? Oh, well, whatever. Regardless, I guess looking after yourself. It's important to look after yourself. Look after your hearing, because there is companies like this who are already planning for the four-quarter game so that down the road, they're going to be able to nail you and lock you in by making a strap magnets to your head so you can recharge your hearing implants. And Echo Pharmacology News. Now, this is another reason why we shouldn't be burning down the rainforests. I don't think that this is really a rainforest flower, but you see my point. Corn lily drugs kills brain tumor stem cells. This is where they get cells, or they make drugs from plants that they discover, and then, you know, they synthesize them and are able to, you know, fight major problems, such as this one. A drug that shuts down critical cell signature pathway. It's the most common and aggressive type of adult brain cancer, successfully kills cancer stem cells through to fuel tumor growth, and it helps cancers evade drug and radiation therapy at John Hopkins study show. Let me try that again. A drug that shuts down the critical cell signaling pathway is the most common and aggressive type of adult brain cancer, successfully kills cancer stem cells thought to fuel tumor growth and help cancer evade drug and radiation therapy, a Johns Hopkins study show. So it doesn't actually cure it, just stops it from growing, getting bigger, and all the rest of it. In a series of laboratory and animal experiments, Johns Hopkins scientists blocked the signaling system known as Hedgehog with an experimental compound called clipomanine to explore the blockade's effect on cancer stem cells that populate glioblastoma multiforme. Cyclopine has been known to inhibit hedgehog signaling, because it's unfortunate when you got all those hedgehogs signaling to each other, we have to keep the hedgehogs disorganized. They reported their findings in the Journal of Stem Cells, published online on July 19th. So it's very good that we have a drug that helps with, you know, brain cancer, because we're probably going to be seeing a lot more brain cancer in the next little while. There's a lot more radiation flying around now, too, you know? I mean, you got all the Bluetooth stuff, you got the, you know, the cell phones all out on the go, you got the cell towers going up there. The amount of electrosmog which is flying around in the universe is pretty big. You know, some people are like, oh, I don't believe in electrosmog. I don't believe in electrosmog. I think that that's just ridiculous, Sean. I can't believe that you buy into that. Well, you know, I mean, this stuff is broadcasting. It's doing something. You know, it's definitely doing something. I think that maybe this is something we should look at. Maybe we should try to, you know, eat more seaweed because it sucks radiation out of your body. I mean, they discovered that after Hiroshima. You know, maybe that might be an idea, something to think about, something to do a little bit of research on. because, well, you know, everyone says everything's super harmless, but I get a headache when I talk on my cell phone for too long. I don't know about you. Now, an interesting story showed up just the other day. I'm not too sure about this one, actually, so, you know, I figured I should probably cover this because it does, create a little bit more panic. It's getting some major, major news stories here now. But apparently Russia has acquired a new type of bomb. Of course, they're calling it the father of all bombs. Now, what it is a fuel-air explosive, where essentially, as I understand it, what it does is it's a thermobaric explosion where they put out some kind of a flammable gas or the bomb hits, floods the area with this flammable gas. The gas then goes off and sucks all the air out, creating this massive, massive explosion. It's a type of explosion, fuel-air explosive, as I understand it. So I'll read the article here. Russia has acquired what it's calling the father of all bombs. A military spokesperson said yesterday it has developed a vacuum bomb, which creates a pressure wave temperature blast comparable to that of a nuclear weapon. Officials are insisting that the bomb does not break any existing weapon treaties and say the lack of environmental contamination when compared with residual radioactivity after a nuclear bomb makes it a greener type of explosion. So what this means is that we can, and apparently the bomb puts out as much damage as a nuclear device, but with no radioactive fallout. They claim that the bomb is not intended to trigger a new arms race, despite pointing that the bomb is 4 times more powerful than the U.S. mother of all bombs device. It is environmentally friendly compared to a nuclear bomb, which will enable us environmentally friendly bombs. It just blows me away. It is environmentally friendly to compare that to a nuclear bomb and will enable us to ensure national security at the same time standing up to international terrorism at any part of the globe in any situation. Alexander Rushkin, deputy chief of the Russian Armed Forces General Staff, was quoted in saying to the Novosti news agency, "A demonstration of the bomb's destructive effort was aired on state television yesterday evening. The move follows the resumptions of long-range bomber patrols by Russian aircraft for the first time since post-Soviet suspension in 1992. Russian President Vladimir Putin said the move was necessary because other states had failed to cease similar flights. So why are they talking about this? Why are they bringing this up onto the news? Is it because we need a new terrorism suspect? Is this a new thing to fuel more fear to crank up the war machine? Or is this legitimate? I mean, it is something to be afraid of, because part of the thing with the whole nuclear deterrent is, you know, if we get nuked or we nuke a country, it's not like we can take that country over because it's radioactive, right? You send your troops in, turns into a bad episode of Fallout, and you're done, right? Well, if they're using non-radioactive bombs and they're just destroying your cities, there's nothing to stop, you know, anybody from just walking in there and setting up shop because, hey, the explosion's done. There's no radioactive fallout. There's no extra bombs. There's no other munitions lying around. We can just go in here, tear down your stuff, build our own stuff, and move right along. This is kind of terrifying to me because now what's the deterrent? What is the deterrent? Because nuclear warfare is, of course, hideous. Any warfare is hideous. But when you look at the nuclear warfare, all the movies, Threads, Day After, all that kind of stuff, they really, really played on the whole fallout effect and everybody dying and the world is rotting because of this radiation poisoning and nothing's going to live here for 500,000 years or what have you. But now we got green bombs, which enable us to kill each other off. Now, so my question is, why are they talking about this, though? Why are they bringing this up? Is it because this is news? Or is this another method to scare the shit out of everybody? And I put it to you that, yeah, part of it's probably news, but I wouldn't be surprised to see this, you know, start winding up being justification for more spending on the military, yada, yada, yada. Because, you know, we must, you know, fight against these Russian bombs that are FAEs, and we must have our own FAEs so that we can nuke their people and blah, 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 or Fathom or whatever you want to say the new, you know, term of the day will be. Very, very disturbing information floating around. Any way you cut it, even if it's just there to scare us, it looks like it could be an indication of a new campaign, or if it's just like legit news and they really do have this thing, which they do, that means that Russia is something to look at, and I don't know if they're going to be, well, what's going on there. I mean, I like Russian people. I think Russian people are very, very cool, just like I like American people, and I think American people are very, very cool, but being Canadian and stuck between the two of them, well, I'm a little bit afraid of their governments as well. So, you know, the guy running Russia right now apparently did a lot of poisoning, like to poison people, And the guy who's running the United States right now hears God talking to him. So, you know, not really a good place to be being in Canada. But for now, looks okay. For now, we keep broadcasting and carrying on. You know, it's another good place to be, though. Place I, and you know, you knew this story was coming. I didn't catch it last week because I wanted to wait for the dust to settle. But now I'm going to cover it in Scientology News. Oh, yeah, baby. Brussels, Belgium. A Belgian prosecutor on Tuesday recommended that the U.S.-based Church of Scientology stand trial for fraud and extortion following a 10-year investigation that concluded the group should be labeled a criminal organization. Full stop, period. Thanks for calling. Scientology said it would fight the criminal charges recommended by investigating prosecutor Jean-Claude Van Espen, who said that up to 12 unidentified people should face charges. Van Espen's probe also concluded that Scientology's Brussels-based Europe office and its Belgian missions conducted unlawful practices in medicine, violated privacy laws, and used illegal business contracts, said Lieve Pellens, a spokeswoman at the federal prosecutor's office. They also faced charges of being a criminal organization, Pellens said in a television interview. An administrative court will decide whether to press charges against Scientologists. In a statement, Scientology's Europe office accused the prosecutor of hounding the organization and said it would contest the charges. Well, yeah, no duh. Obviously, they're not going to sit back and be like, oh, okay, you caught us. For the last 10 years, the prosecutor has been using the media, trying to damage the reputation of the Church of Scientology, and not being able to put a case in court, Scientology said. As a consequence, this created a climate of intolerance and discrimination. It's racism! They're not a different race. It's discrimination! And added that the prosecutor's recommendation suggests Scientology was guilty even before the court could hear the charges. They're guilty! Making it difficult for the Church of Scientology to recover and properly defend itself before the court. Yes, well, when you lay out damning information that's the truth, it makes it very hard to, you know, come back from that. Scientology has been active in Belgium for nearly 3 decades. In 2003, it opened as an international office near the headquarters of the European Union to lobby for its right to be recognized as an official religious group, a status it does not enjoy in Belgium, which it should not because it is not a religious group. It is a money-grubbing psychotic cult. Just so you keep a track. A Belgian paramilitary committee report in 1997 labeled Scientology as a sect, and investigations were launched into the group's finances and practices, such as personality tests conducted on new members. Like, you know, when I start my cult at my little compound, you know, my whole, you know, spa resort thing, I'm going to do personality tests too, so that way I can, like, tailor make my mind fuck for everybody out there. Investigators have spent the last decade trying to determine how far Scientology went into recruiting converts after numerous complaints were filed with the police by ex-members alleging they'd been victims of intimidation and extortion. So you got people who were members saying, multiple people who were members saying that, hey, we've been victims here. Justice officials seized financial records, correspondence, bank statements, and other papers in their decade-long probe to track the flow of money in Scientology. Police also raided the offices of several consultancy firms linked to the Church of Scientology. Helen said the prosecutors expect Scientology to mount a strong legal challenge to the charge in a court hearing, which could come in the next 2 to 3 months. She acknowledges this could delay the case for years. Yeah, because that's how they do it. They'll just throw money at the court system. Belgium, Germany, and other European countries have been criticized by the State Department for labeling Scientology as a cult or a sect and enacting laws to restrict its operations. The German government considers Scientology a commercial enterprise and takes advantage of vulnerable people. Well, you know, the Germans would know about that. The Germans know all about how to use, you know, pseudo-religious information to try to whip people up into some sort of a righteous fervor. You know, if the Germans don't like it, chances are it's not too good. The Los Angeles-based Church of Scientology, which is seeking to expand in Europe and be recognized as a legitimate religion, teaches that technology can expand the mind and help solve problems. That's not what they teach, actually. They teach that your body's plagued by invisible thetans that you can get rid of by holding cans of asparagus, and that, you know, after you give them $500,000, you can turn invisible and fly. That's what they teach. The church, founded in 1954, counts actors Tom Cruise and John Travolta amongst its 10 million members. You know, I wonder if that's how I'm going to check out. I wonder if it's going to be the Church of Scientology who shows up on my doorstep and shuts me down, you know? You never know. Now, in head jack news, now this is really good. Neural interfaces are very, very neat. A motorized wheelchair that moves when the operator thinks of particular words has been demonstrated by a U.S. company. Very, very cool. The wheelchair works by intercepting signals sent from the brain to their voice box, even when no sound is actually produced. Now, this is very Firefox. For those of you who haven't seen the old film, Clint Eastwood movie, Firefox, check it out, because this is how the jet basically ran. You had to, like, think in Russian and stuff like that. The company behind the chair, Ambient, is developing the technology with Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago in the United States. The wheelchair could help people with spinal injuries, neuropathological problems like cerebral palsy, or motor neuron disease, operate computers and other equipment despite serious problems with muscle control. The system will work, providing a person can still control their larynx or voice box, which may be the case even if they lack muscle coordination necessary to produce coherent speech. Very, very cool stuff. The larynx control system, called Audio, was developed by researchers at Michael Callahan and Thomas Coleman University of Illinois at the Urbana-Champaign, U.S., who together also founded Ambient. The system works via sensor-laden neckband, which eavesdrops on the electrical impulses sent to the larynx muscles, then relays the signals via encrypted wireless link, smart, to a nearby computer. The computer decodes these signals and matches them to a series of pre-recorded words to determine during the training exercise. So you augment this thing to you, blah, 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 blah. These words can be used to direct a motorized wheelchair. Callahan and Coleman say they can also be used, can be sent to a speech synthesizer, allowing a paralyzed person to speak out loud. Recent refinements used to the algorithms make it possible to interpret whole sentences thought out by the user. Now, that's significant. This isn't just go, stop kind of stuff. This is like, I would like a glass of water. This could potentially restore near-normal speech to everyone who has not spoken for years. Interesting stuff. Now, this is hot shit, man. If we can get this going, this would be really cool. Imagine utilizing this kind of stuff for people who aren't disabled. Imagine you put this stuff in your car. Imagine you put this stuff for, hooking yourself into your own equipment. And, anything that enables you to jack in a little bit harder, it's a pretty cool concept. Because I like the idea of neural networking. I think it's pretty cool. Now, you remember a while back, I was talking about a device called NeuroSky, which is a brain-based electronic system. Okay, you could focus and meditate on a very, very neat idea. But there was a little bit of kickback based on that, which is story number 13 here, or 12 rather. Also in Headjack News, your brain might be the next video game controller. It may sound pretty awesome, but the prospect of brain-controlled virtual joysticks has some scientists worried that the games might end up controlling your brain. Now, this is interesting. Several makers of brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs, devices that facilitate operating a computer by thought alone, claim the technology is poised to jump from the medical sector to the consumer gaming world in 2008. Sounds kind of cool. Companies include Emotive Systems and NeuroSky. They've released BCI-based software development kits. Gaming companies may release BCI game next year, but scientists worry that users' brains might be subjected to negative effects. What does it do to the brain? For example, the device sometimes forces users to slow down their brain waves. Afterward, users have reported trouble focusing their attention. Interesting. Imagine that somebody using a game with a slow brain activity and then drives a car while in that state, said Niels Bremer, leading independent research in medical operations of BCIs. You could have an accident. I think it's a rare possibility. You should be tested before people do this. Well, I'm all for more testing to see what, you know, these things that we strap on our brains do, because brains are important. You know, your brain, you can't just put a hearing aid on your brain. Consumer BCIs use non-invasive electrocephalogram, EEG sensors, attached to the scalp so to detect brainwave patterns. The signal are amplified and digitized so the computer can process the information. BCIs allow game players to move around and manipulate objects within a virtual game environment using thought alone. They can also detect and monitor the brainwave patterns association with a person's emotional state and stress levels. So I wonder if you could put in advertisings inside the virtual realm and then register the feedback you get when people look at the advertising on the video game screen through the EEG. I wonder if that's possible. I think it is possible, and it would be a really good way to augment the income for these companies making these BCIs. Just saying. The technology, both implantative and non-invasive versions, has been successfully tested in quadriplegics, helping patients move a cursor on computer screens, turn switches on and off, and operate a wheelchair. But when it's used for sheer entertainment, scientists worry that the gamers will experience the effects of neurofeedback, a technique used to heighten awareness and control of brainwaves by providing real-time graphic representation of the user's brainwave activity. Biofeedbacks work similarly, using physiological information such as blood pressure, skin temperature, and heart rate. For example, in a stress-reducing game created by Smart Brain Games for medical purposes, players can reach optimum speed for driving a race car only when they are calm. But when the Food and Drug Administration has approved the device only for relaxation and muscle re-education, the company doesn't believe it should be used as just a game. From a clinical perspective, we are super concerned about any use of this technology that's being touted as a toy entertainment, says Linda Greco, co-founder of Smart Brain Games. Emotive and NeuroSky have their roots in medical technologies. University researchers are testing NeuroSky technology to treat attention deficit disorders, depression, addictions, phobias, according to Greg Hiver, the company's vice president of marketing. Nevertheless, now that the companies have released developmental kits for games that would be strictly fun, medical professionals are bristling. Most biofeedback is used for clearly defined clinical purposes, specifically to try and eliminate or ameliorate a problem, says Alan Grails, president of Association for Applied Physiotherapy and Biofeedback. Using feedback of brain activity for non-therapeutic purposes is something we have to look at more carefully. So is this Luddite? Is this Luddite, or is this, you know, a legitimate concern? I mean, you know, this is kind of wild shit when we're talking about, you know, using your brains to control video games. I mean, you know, this is, you know, here I am playing my Battlefield 2142. 2147. 2142? I think it's 2142. Anyway, played that the other day. Damn, that's a nice game. Anyway, you know, Battlefield 2142, and you're like running, and you got the brain on the go, and now, but you see, what people aren't realizing is that this could be another form of interface, because a lot of people use their keyboards. You know, like, I like, when I was playing first-person shooters back 10,000 years ago, I would use a trackball mouse and the keyboard, which was cool, because you had multiple keys on the keyboard, right? And then, you know, SciTech came out with, like, gaming pads and stuff like that, where you could pre-program buttons and stuff like this, and now they got the keyboard, where you can, like, you know, totally redo your, remap your whole keyboard, so it has images of specific keys on it and stuff like that, so you can, like, you know, use it for gaming. But now, and of course there's always gaming mice and, you know, the Wii controller, but now what if you were to combine, like, the Wii controller with that brain map and a head tracking? I mean, you could make a pretty immersive gaming environment for yourself. As a matter of fact, you could probably go pretty seriously online with that stuff. We're getting to the point now where your avatar, depending on the world that you're within, depending on the size of that world, is kind of like your astral version of yourself. And this is where this kind of stuff makes me really excited. You know, I really dig this kind of stuff, because I'd love to set up, you know, some kind of a virtual realm. Even if I never get together with my little, you know, Camp Kennedy concept up there in the wilderness, it'd be kind of neat to have, like, I don't know, something like that in virtual space, where people could go there using a specific type of gaming system. But the problem is, I don't want to do it through something like Second Life or whatever, because, I mean, everybody's got to pay money for that, right? I'd like to keep it so that it's, well, either the money goes to, like, well, to me, so that I could use it to build the actual place, or, you know, something like that. It's, I don't want to use it to make other people money, you know? It just doesn't seem, maybe it's an idea. I don't know, it just doesn't seem to sit right with me. It doesn't feel right, you know, it just doesn't feel right. But this kind of technology, though, boy, exciting stuff. Your daily hack today: how to optimize BitTorrent for ISPs. Very, very cool. These days, nothing worries an internet service provider more than peer-to-peer file trading. Depending on where you live, P2P can account for 50 to 75% of broadband internet traffic. We mostly have popularity of BitTorrent to thank for this crazy amount of data going off to and fro. This amount of traffic can raise ISP's daily costs of delivering services, causing congestion either in your neighborhood or on your ISP's network, and force the ISP to buy increased bandwidth capacity. But if you've been paying close attention to your BitTorrent transfers lately, or if you've been simply reading the news, you'll notice that ISPs have begun to take drastic measures to slow the flood of data currently clogging up their pipes. Even though many of them deny it, most ISPs actively engage in traffic shaping, bandwidth throttling, connection denial, or some such tactic to keep the amount of bandwidth consumed by high traffic applications in their networks to a minimum. While this does not often ensure better performance for everyone in the neighborhood, it can mean painfully slow transfer speeds for those dabbling in P2P, legit or not. So what we got here is you've got the R4 encryption offered by many BitTorrent clients today will obfuscate not only the header, but the entire stream, making it considerably more difficult for an ISP to detect that you're using BitTorrent. Even if your ISP does not force you to enable encryption, you may be connecting to peers with ISPs that do. And as well, you know, we live in a surveillance nation. We live in a surveillance nation. You should be very aware of what, you know, you're downloading. So I think that encryption on your BitTorrent is probably a good idea. And that's why I got the information from Abort Retry Fail, and I posted it. So there you go. Thank you very much, Abort Retry Fail, for today's Daily Hack. Recommendia. Recommedia. Orwell rolls in his grave. This is part one. This was sent to me by Cheer Miggles. Kiri, hang on, he sent his pronunciation. Thank you very much for sending your pronunciation. It's actually pronounced Cree Meagles. There we go. Guiles. Cree Me Guiles. It's bad when the pronunciation is almost as hard to nail down as the actual word. Cree Meagles. Thank you, Cree Meagles, for Orwell rolls in his grave. It's part one, so you got to click on part two and all the rest of it too, but definitely worth checking out. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care, people who actually care enough to sign up, subscribe to the program, and donate a little bit every month. Thank you. I sometimes make light of that sort of stuff, and I make jokes about, yeah, send me your money. But you know what? The people who really do that really make a huge difference. And, you know, I don't have the awards. This show belongs to you. I'll keep broadcasting if you keep doing it. If you can't donate, distribute. If you can hand it out to people, let people know where it is. Try to get it out there so that we can get more information, more people thinking. Even if you don't agree with me, even if you think I'm an asshat, that's fine. But, you know, think, okay, be independent. Do what you have to do in order to make sure that you're in control of your own life. And if you can't donate, you can. Go to the Dark Atlas website and click on the Donate tab on the top right hot link, or send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 12150C, 56th Street, Delta BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And, you know, to guys out there who, like, there's a lot of people who send me, like, gifts and stuff like that. Thank you very much for the gifts. I do get them, and I appreciate them very much. So they usually wind up going, I have a special, like, little room that I keep stuff in that people send me. So thank you very much for without naming names or whatever, thanks for the people who have been sending in little presents from time to time. Thank you. Sydney is now a love bomber. Okay, Sydney came in, wanted a digital baptism. So, Sydney, you are now Love Bomber. Before you think that's a weird one, you should look up what love bombing is. It's a technique used by cults to try to get people involved. Very, very cool. I wanted to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel@rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, make sure you check out Infected Mushroom. Lots of good stuff there. Just this particular album, I'm not too sure what this one is, but everything by Infected Mushroom is incredible. Okay, so, you know, that's just the way it's going to work. I'm going to fade out with a track from these guys. And remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats. Until next time, remember, that's what Server said. End of line.